Can I just start by saying bloody hell? All these people who said to me, oh, yeah, you'll be fine, you'll be fine. Can I just say I'm not feeling that fine when I stand up at the front of this room and see just how many people have got up so early. Hello to everyone in Mount Gambier also. But this is a remarkable achievement to have an event like this in South Australia every year, something that I remember coming to a long time ago, particularly before I had a child and realised that sleep was a much-needed quantity in my life. Thank you, Senator Penny Wong, for your warm welcome to us all and reminding us why International Women's Day is an important day to celebrate. And thank you for your remarkable leadership and feminist trailblazing. I learnt through some of my own mistakes many years ago that you should never say yes to an invitation to do something just because you're flattered by the invitation. Well, when I got Penny's letter to do this speech, that personal advice to myself went straight out the window, and I couldn't have been more thrilled and surprised and honoured. And I think I speak for probably everyone in this room when I say to you, Penny, you rock, lady. Thank you also to the hard-working organising committee and to the fabulous women of Adelaide who maintain this fierce tradition of this amazing breakfast. It's incredible to see this many people here. So let me begin properly. Katrina, I acknowledge your powerful welcome to country. I wish to recognise where we are and what that means for us all. On the lands of the Adelaide Plains, the Kaurna people have lived in this country, loved this country, been of this country and for this country for the vastness of time. And so on behalf of us all, I acknowledge you as the traditional owners of this place. And I thank you for being a voice for women in this place. I want to say more about the traditional owners, but I'm going to save that for the end of my speech. I also wish to acknowledge the dignitaries present here today and add my thanks to those already mentioned rather than go through it all again, and I hope you'll forgive me that indulgence as we celebrate International Women's Day. It's definitely an honour to be asked to give this address. That's because, in part, in this week in Adelaide, this is the biggest International Women's Day breakfast run anywhere in the country. And it's an annual reminder of the proud tradition of South Australian women who forged a feminist future for our nation. It's alive and well today, as it has been for hundreds of years, and in South Australia. And just for those of you who still think I don't live here, I do actually still live in Adelaide. It's also an honour to address you because of the women who have given this address previously. And it's quite a roll call. I won't go through them all, but I would like to highlight Australia's first female Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, broadcaster, Fran Kelly, academic, Susan Carland, author, journalist, Anne Summers, foreign correspondent, Sally Sara, the tennis legend, Yvonne Goolagong-Cawley, author, academic, filmmaker, and my dear friend, Professor Larissa Berendt, and former High Court Justice, Mary Gaudron. At the outset today, yes, okay, clap, give me a chance to take a breath, that'd be good. And at the outset today, I'd also like to take a moment to acknowledge some of the women who have been giants in my life, and giants in the life of women for South Australia. I thank you for being in the room today, and most of you who are dear to me will know that you are dear to me. But equally, there will be others among you who are likely not aware of the important role you have played in my growth as a woman, as a feminist, and how you have challenged me to be resilient and steadfast. I would also like to recognise those of you who've travelled from outside South Australia, and frankly, anyone prepared to get up and out of the house this early in the morning to listen to anyone say anything. In July, as we always do, we celebrate NAIDOC Week, and this year the theme is incredibly fitting. The theme for NAIDOC Week this year is Because of Her, We Can. I love this clapping, it's so excellent. Because of Her, We Can. It's a powerful reminder that there are so many women who have forged the path for us to this point. And it's only because of their intellect, their courage, their tenacity, their sacrifice, their resilience, that we have been able to progress as far as we have. And I believe it's our responsibility to teach their stories to our daughters and granddaughters and to our sons and grandsons so they know this history, because it is their history. And we need to do this so we don't take for granted nor let slip backwards the progress that has been hard won. I admit that I'm one of those women who cringe when I hear that history denied and the voice of entitlement from those who believe the fight for women before us is inconsequential to the opportunities many of us enjoy today, me included. One of my first lessons in my path towards making a contribution to trying to make the world a better place was encapsulated beautifully on the back of a T-shirt I read years ago, and I can't source the original owner of this comment, but I think we all know that those who do not know their history are doomed to repeat it. I can't move through this speech without mentioning at least a few women personally who have made my path easier, more clear, and I hope equally determined. I'm thinking especially today of Loretta O'Donoghue, whose legendary leadership for our nation has spanned generations, and she has taken a personal investment in me for which I'm incredibly grateful. Loretta's personal story of resilience and strength and courage is simply breathtaking. For that young girl from that desert community who was taken from her mother would go on to be our state's first Aboriginal nurse and then serve at the highest echelons of politics and governance, often including being the voice for First Australians at countless negotiating tables. She is one of South Australia's greatest contributors to national advancement. And I'm also thinking of the late Kumanjay Rigney, South Australia's first Aboriginal school principal and proud Kaurna woman who passed away last year. Over recent days, I have had the honour of speaking to one of her granddaughters, Takari, about what I should say about her Nana's trailblazing legacy for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, for our state and for women. And this is what Takari shared with me. Nana Allager is well known for her career and academic achievements, but for me, her granddaughter, she is best known for her warm hugs, kind smile, contagious laughter, and love of chocolate chip biscuits. Nana believes strongly in education for girls and women to create an empowered, confident set of leaders. Growing up as an Indigenous woman in the 50s, she had limited educational opportunities, but that never stopped her from aiming high and exceeding expectations. Nana Allager developed the first urban Aboriginal school and became the first female Aboriginal school principal in Australia in 1986. With this achievement, she was a role model and a teacher, inspiring and motivating students to succeed. Nana believed that everyone, regardless of class, gender or race, deserved an education and a supportive environment for learning. Allager believed that fostering Indigenous women leaders includes empowering women, giving voice to their issues, giving women the tools they need for success, to educate women, not on them. Nana Allager's greatest lesson was, as a woman, to never settle for ordinary, but reach for the extraordinary. I want to take a moment to thank you, Takari, for sharing those beautiful words so I could share them with everyone here today. I also want to acknowledge a South Australian institution that has meant a lot to me and has had a lot to do with me standing up here today, so thanks for that. I want to acknowledge the Women's Information Switchboard, which in 2018, the Women's Information Service still delivers a crucial service to women in need in our local community across the state. That was the place that I began to understand feminism and the need for me to understand the intersectionality of race, culture and gender. It was here where I worked with paid staff and volunteers that I was encouraged to go to university, which I never completed, apologies to the School of Social Work at the University of South Australia and the awesome women there who worked very hard to keep me enrolled. I just got a little bit busy outside of study and I never quite got back to it. But it was here at the Women's Information Switchboard that I was told by other women that I was smart, that I was capable, and that I could make a difference. And as far as I can remember, that's probably the first time I heard that, and I was 22 years old. It was also here where I began to see firsthand the needs of women in some of life's most challenging circumstances that we still have not escaped. I will never forget the experience of listening to women who were fleeing violence, often with children, and me and the other workers trying to find support services for them. And I will never forget the strong sense of shared purpose that comes with women working together to help other women. That is my most cherished memory of my time there. So, like so many of you, my formative experiences set me on a path to the pursuit of social change for the better. The pursuit of a future where women are safe from violence, are paid equally, are promoted equally, and share public leadership equally. In upshot, the pursuit of a feminist future, and a feminist future that commits to equality across the great diversity among us as women. Because being a woman is not in itself diverse. We make up over half the world. So these days, I pursue that vision in one of the nation's biggest sporting codes as the AFL's General Manager for Inclusion and Social Policy. I was the second woman ever appointed to the executive ranks of the AFL back in August 2016 and the first ever Indigenous person ever appointed to the AFL executive. Thank you for that clap. I must admit there are days where I feel like I need a cape. And what a powerful vehicle for change sport can be. Do you know that more than 6 million people went through the gates to go to the football last year? And we introduced AFLW on the back of a largely unrecognised history. Yeah, it's pretty great, isn't it? Gil's going to be very happy with that clap. A lot of people don't realise that women have been playing Aussie rules football in Australia for more than 100 years. So it wasn't before time that the AFLW started. The tagline for the first season was, "You cannot be what you cannot see." And that has not faded away in our second season. Now, I never really sought to play football. I did a little bit in high school. But watching Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people play, who to this day still make me feel proud, and I love watching how good blackfellas are at footy, and watching Australians from all sorts of backgrounds cheer them on. And we can almost take for granted the fact that watching first Australians be so good at a game that excites so many of us, that it has this rare capacity to launch us from a conversation of deficit and disadvantage to one of awe and pride. So much clapping. I wasn't anticipating that when I was still fiddling with this at 2 a.m. this morning. It's that spine-tingling sense that I recall as a young person, watching footy with my dear late father, that had me saying yes to the AFL when I was presented with the opportunity for a new role. And I said yes because knowing I may be able to support Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders players stay deadly, knowing they remind Indigenous kids that their birthright is the brilliance, insight, ingenuity and resilience that is the hallmark of the oldest continuing cultures on the planet. And I said yes because I knew AFLW was coming, and now we see the example lit up when those inspirational athletes of AFLW showcase their grit, their strength, their courage and determination. Because I knew that this would remind all our kids that women and girls can do anything, be anything, and as Beyonce might put it, slay at anything they choose to tackle. And I said yes because great feminist women and great feminist history told me that there is nowhere I'm not allowed to go and be me. So yes, after having had a red hot go, along with tens of thousands of other Australians, including the football community, at trying to change the Australian Constitution to recognise first Australians and ridding our Constitution of clauses that still exist in 2018 that enable discrimination on the basis of race, I thought I would take a different course, and to be honest, I thought it would be a little easier. I have to admit that trying to change the Constitution kicked my ass. My role at the AFL gives me a voice at the most senior tables of the industry on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander issues, multiculturalism, gender, sexuality and transgender. And perhaps it would be fair to assume that I have my say on other things as well. So the game of Australian rules football chose to create a senior role to ensure social policy would be part of the foundation of our continued growth, acknowledging that there are things that we still need to do better and continue to learn about, but importantly, act upon. So say what you will about sport, its role in promoting hypermasculinity, but I can tell you there are increasing numbers of women making their voices heard in this industry. And without doubt, sport has always been and always will be a critical player in moving along social change. And indeed, as a sporting code as large as ours, we particularly have a responsibility to play our part. Over the past year, as the Me Too and Time's Up movement have gathered pace, I have noticed a recurring theme in many discussions that I've had with women since before those movements really gathered pace, but I realised a consistent theme. The number of times that women have started to share their stories with me, starting the sentence with the sentence, "I don't want to cause a problem, but..." I believe that commonality needs to be discussed and addressed. Many of you in this room and in Mount Gambier, no doubt, already know why, but allow me to share some of my perspective on this. "I don't want to cause a problem, but" tells us something about how skilled many women are at tending to the feelings of others first. That even in a moment of the rawest personal disclosure, our first utterance can be an expression of concern for others. We don't want to cause a fuss or make things awkward for others. And there is the shame, the embarrassment, and the fear of not being believed when we do speak up. We just want to be able to get on with our jobs and our lives without having to deal with unacceptable behaviour from others. And we all want to be able to live our lives without harassment or abuse. And in that cause, we often appropriately look out for the well-being of others. And this is a good thing, yet we also need to safeguard our own well-being and safety. And we need to look out for each other when our well-being and safety is threatened. So I hope that by speaking up, those women who have done so during the past year have helped to make this behaviour less likely to happen to other women in the future. And I hope that if women still experience unacceptable conduct, we feel we can begin our sentences by saying, "I need to tell you this. I need you to listen to this. Or it's important that you know this," instead of, "I don't want to cause a problem, but..." I do want to be clear that I'm not dismissing the power and importance of collective action. Collective action is as necessary now as it has ever been. The theme of this year's International Women's Day is Press for Progress, and it reminds us that progress doesn't just come about by itself. It isn't a passive state. We have to will it on. to bring it into being and make it happen through action. Without that action, that forward momentum, we will only mark time. And when we talk of pressing for progress, I also want us to think about which women we're talking about and whose progress we're talking about. Is it for the women who are already the most accomplished and advantaged? Or is it perhaps even more urgent and necessary to press for progress and for the women who are fighting for their daily survival? Women of colour, women in poverty, women fleeing terror and strife, women who are simply not safe or are fighting for the safety of the oppressed men in their families and communities. If we are to press for progress and achieve it, another challenge rests with us as women. Denying the temptation to pull other women down can be incredibly powerful. Like many of you, I've had my share of slings and arrows sent my way, and sometimes they come from other women. And it doesn't feel especially shocking when that occurs, and I know I'm not alone. But I've also felt the relief, the joy, the support and encouragement of other women, even those who once slung arrows but then stopped and began supporting me. In my experience, when that moment occurs, it is transformative. Feminism has challenged me to think about how I can be a better team player in a collective, in whichever role I can contribute to, because working together creates our best chance of achieving the most progress. I've also been thinking a lot recently about the responsibility we owe our daughters and our sons to safeguard our heritage. And to safeguard our heritage, we must honestly confront our history rather than be victims to it. And confronting our history, there is a natural demand that the truth be told. I spent a bit of time talking about the importance of us, for us as a country, telling the truth about our country's history so that we can learn from it, understand its legacy, and deal with our past. And last year, in the Uluru Statement, we saw a powerful collective of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander voice affirm once again the importance of such truth-telling to the nation's First Peoples. But it's also important for all of us as Australians. So while we can nurture traditions, we also have to be prepared to face the parts of our heritage that don't make us feel the warmth and cosiness of nostalgia, to face the parts that make us flinch. Telling the truth is critical to addressing structural barriers to equality. One of the things I most love about the event, this event, is that there is always an excellent turnout of young women, many at their first event like this. So I want to turn some of my comments to you specifically and try not to envy your youth. I want to talk to you as you make your feminist way in the world. Read. Read widely. Read as if your future happiness and confidence and knowledge depend on it, because in part they will. Be kind, not just to others but to yourself. Worry about what's on the inside. Who you are is what's important, not what you look like, not what you wear. It took me such a long time to start to feel comfortable in my own skin. And it's my hope for you that you will reach that point much quicker than I have. And to be honest, I'm still a work in progress. Why else would you wear Jimmy Choo shoes to breakfast? Pick great friends, especially great female friends, and quality over quantity. True friends will be your rock in hard times. They'll be your comfort. And finally, be courageous, because you're stronger than you know. There'll always be challenges and issues to address. Carry your mantle towards change with as much confidence and openness as you can harness. Thank you for being here today in such record numbers. And thank you to every woman and man who acts for gender equality, for your kindness, your courage, your strength. Thank you for those of you who refuse to give up on pressing ahead for progress, striving always to leave no one behind. And finally, as I end my remarks today, I'd like to end where I started, adding a personal note of honouring. I acknowledge the traditional owners of the land we meet on today, and particularly note their extraordinary spirit, strength, protection, fight of Kaurna women for their country, their community and their cultures. I also recognise Indigenous women all over the world for doing the same. Each of us are indebted to these women. As someone not raised in my culture, on my own path, often supported by amazing women, I want to acknowledge my mother, Janice Alderton, who as a very young non-Indigenous woman married an Aboriginal man. A union not readily accepted at the time, but as solid and beautiful as any I have ever had the privilege to witness. My mother was principled and brave and stronger than you might assume at first glance. Sadly, my mother lost her life to ovarian cancer in 2014, and it's a bitch of a disease, so get yourself checked out. My mother taught me the value of a strong, resilient spirit, a generous heart, the importance of protecting others. She taught me the need to fight and keep what we have for the benefit of us all. So in my moment to publicly celebrate and recognise International Women's Day on Kaurna country in 2018, I pay my respects to the Kaurna women, to Indigenous women across Australia and around the world, and I pay my respects to my mother.